It is 12 noon in the East Coast. It is 7 p.m. in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Today is May 11, 2016, and this is Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth. Today in Israel, we are commemorating the Memorial Day, the day to remember the fallen soldier of all the wars of Israel. As we end up tonight, the memorials, you know, recording at all, we're going to start the Independence Day celebration, a day to remember that so many people fall, gave their life and sacrificed everything that they had in order for Israel and the Jewish people to have a safe home. It's not for nothing that we came about after 2,000 years. It's not for nothing that Israel got to be in this land that they called it then Palestine, but it's the biblical Holy Land, the land that God gave to the Jewish people to be a holy people before God and to be light upon nations. It is us that is supposed to bring light and bring peace to the world. And since the day that we started it all, in 1948, we are in war constantly. We work hard to start a negotiation to peace, to have an agreement. But there are people that don't want gods of Israel to be on this land. There are people who try to fight it. But God of Israel has intentions and he wants all his children to be happy and united. And this is our old test of this time. And today, as we celebrate tonight the Independence Days, we don't forget all the victims of war all over the globe. We recognize the suffering of many people. We understand that still we have war in Syria and in Kurdistan, and in Iraq, in Yemen, in Africa, the sacrifice that people have to be free there, it's incredible. And we still have soldiers of America all over the globe keeping peace, helping, and trying to make sense out of this shamble that the world is in. And today, as we remember the fallen and start to celebrate the freedom that Israel have, we want to send a blessing to all the wounded soldiers all over, to all the people that work so hard to mend, to the United Nations that sends so much help to the refugees all over the globe. And we are going to call upon everybody to open their hearts and think if we really want to go through another round of world war. By starting this, let's listen to some of what I prepare for you.
the diversity,
tech startups,
the fresh produce,
agriculture,
Gold Star,
Ice Cafe,
the beach, the hotel, it's
resiliency,
the safety of being in a Jewish community,
birthright,
it's beautiful,
it's where all my family is from,
Bibi Netanyahu,
Nativ, fruit that grows in your front yard,
music, the shuk,
Magnum ice cream,
the Rin Sabar,
it makes my neshama feel good.
Healthcare advancements.
The job next.
Making the Negev bloom.
The accents.
Kibbutz next.
Israeli soldiers.
Crack Square.
Pita. The Dead Sea.
Teva Na'ot.
Adventure.
It's homeland to everyone.
The sunrises.
Shawarma.
The community.
Marzipan.
Hebrew.
Joshua Seed and Melissa Goldman.
The food.
Unity.
Family.
Rafting down the Jordan River.
Nature.
Bucket hat.
Of history.
Pop rocks chocolate.
Hiking.
Spear of Shabbat.
The weather.
The cat.
Tel Aviv.
Takana Mekazit.
Falafel.
Bar Ilan.
Chutzpah.
Israeli salad.
Camaraderie.
You get to ride camels everywhere.
Shachuka.
Kogel.
Fun.
Nanach's Masada.
Hummus.
Choco Besaki.
Do you know I love everything about Israel?
All right. That's what, in 60 seconds, I guess, what you like about Israel. Israel is a country that forget the side that we have to defend ourselves, the soldier and everything. Let's think about what Israel is all about. Israel is about innovation, is about a lot of social conditioning. People are really into everything. They want to know, they want to learn, they want to be, you know, a startup nation, and they want to be the winner. Nothing you can do about that. It's the spirit of the land. You know, when people feel that they don't have much time, they need to survive and they want it fast. And now they do everything in their power to invent something. And they do invent. And they invent the tools for medical instrument. They invent tools to technological surveillance. They build you up constantly. And Israeli, they are in your face. Sometimes it's annoying, but trust me, you feel alive when you're in Israel. Come to Tel Aviv, visit us. Come to Jerusalem, pray with us. Come to Tiberia and enjoy the scenery. And, you know, today I want to call upon the world also to change the name of the Dead Sea to the Sea of Life. Because something that always, you know, stagger me why people decide to call a sea a dead one when it's very much alive. Healing people and helping people, and nobody cares for it because it's a dead sea. And here in Israel, they call it the salty sea, and I want to call him the city, a sea of life, because we really need to bring it to life. So this is about Israel and about what we can find it. Of course, it's touch and go. You never know when war will erupt, but more important now, we need to focus where the war can happen very soon and close. We're talking about the situation that we have in Syria. Today, the Saudis foreign minister, a very kind, gentle voice, really a voice that wants to talk peace, speak about the solution, the political solution in Syria, spoke about the fact that Assad needs to go. When they say Assad needs to go, if not, they're going to send ground troops, because or nicely or by force, it's not something that you undermine. If you think about the Russian, that now they are working on Crimea, to empower Crimea, and they're busy and they're not going to be involved in this round, you can understand that the situation can be really, really dangerous for all the parties. So we don't want to startle anything, and we don't want to cry, you know, be careful or anything. We're just saying, guys, keep calm. Just do your work and make sure nobody has a plan to start a new war. All right? Let's get some music and we'll be back. This is Orly Benny Davis with BBS Radio. And I'm so happy to be here today. The impossible truth is always here. Bye-bye.
My baby broke my heart again. I'm just like a fool on her back. My baby broke my heart again. I'm just like a fool, won't look back.
Oh, I am about to celebrate tonight the Israeli independence. I was already going. But let's listen first to the foreign minister of this Saudi Arabia.
Hello and welcome to the France 24 interview. Our guest today is the foreign minister of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, Adel Al Jubeir. Mr. Minister, thank you very much for being on the show.
A pleasure to be here.
I want to begin with the situation in Syria. Foreign ministers have been negotiating for weeks, meeting in a number of places, trying to stop the fighting and eventually find a solution to this never-ending crisis. However, there's no real ceasefire, and there's even less of a political solution. The outlook is definitely grim.
I would take issue with the word never-ending crisis. The Syrian crisis will end. It will end without Bashar al-Assad. It will end with a country that is unified. It will end with a country that is has civil society government, and it will end with a country that has equality. There is no doubt about it in my mind. It could take 6 months, it could take 3 months, it could take 3 years. But the situation in Syria will come to an end and there will be no Bashar al-Assad in it. The choice that we've always said is twofold. One option is to end it through a political process based on the Geneva I Declaration and Security Council Resolution 2254, which is what everybody prefers and what we have been trying to achieve in the discussions of the Vienna group and the like-minded group that met in Paris. Or it will be ended through a military conflict. The Syrian people will not allow a man who's responsible for the murder of 400,000 people, the displacement of 12 million people, and the destruction of a country to remain in power.
So you're pursuing the first path, but it seems it is not working. Those talks are going on and on. The fighting continues. People are dying. Said that there were some war crimes recently committed by the regime in the town of Aleppo. So this means the second solution is the only one left.
The regime has committed war crimes from day one. Their torture and murder of children, their indiscriminate bombardment of civilians, their use of chemical weapons, all of these are outrageous crimes, crimes against humanity and crimes against international law. There should be no doubt about it. More reason why Bashar al-Assad has to go, and more reason why Bashar al-Assad will go. No doubt about it. Now,
how?
We are pursuing a political process. There is a consensus that has emerged in the world about what the political process should look like. The Syrian opposition has unified and is moving along this process. They have offered serious proposals for the transition period on how to transition power from Bashar al-Assad to a governing council that will then set the stage for new elections and a new government. But the obstinacy and the foot dragging and the refusal has been on the part of the Bashar al-Assad regime. And so we will continue to support the political process as if there is no war. And we will continue to support the opposition as if there is no political process. Like I said in the beginning, the choice is Bashar al-Assad's. He will be removed either through a political process or through a military force.
The talks between the opposition and the regime mediated by the UN Special Envoy Staffan de Mistura, do you think they will resume in Geneva? Or do you think that given the situation, especially the latest fighting, it's virtually impossible that they will resume and be a potential solution?
This is something that Mr. de Mistura has been working very diligently on. This is something that all the countries are encouraging. At the end of the day, the cessation of hostilities has led to a fairly noticeable reduction in hostilities, not in the Halab area because of the actions of the regime and its allies, but there has been an improvement in the reduction of violence, and there has been an improvement in the distribution of humanitarian assistance. That we have to acknowledge. It's not perfect. It's not where we want it to be. And all the violations have been on the part of the regime side, for which the regime has to be held accountable. There have been reports of aggression by the al-Nusra and Daesh, but al-Nusra and Daesh are classified as terrorist organizations who are not part of the ceasefire.
Should this support be amplified? More military help, more financial help to maybe get even, if it's possible, with the regime, its allies, Iran, Russia, other militias?
Our view has always been we should provide more military support to
the opposition. But why isn't this happening?
Opposition. Because it is there is an agreement among the countries that support the opposition militarily that we will do everything by consensus and that we will not do things alone. Our argument has been from the very beginning that we should provide the opposition with more weapons and more lethal weapons, including surface-to-air missiles, including more sophisticated anti-tank weapons, so that we can change the balance of power on the ground.
Which Washington doesn't agree. Is this changing, maybe?
We hope so. We will continue to advocate for it. I think if you notice that the types of weapons that have been delivered to the opposition today are more lethal than what was delivered a year ago, and what was delivered a year ago is more lethal than what was delivered 2 years ago. So it's trending in the right direction. We will continue to push very hard in order to provide them with the weapons they need to change the balance of power on the ground.
Are the Russians ready to abandon Bashar al-Assad eventually?
I can't speak to this because I don't know. I know that they have said, and they've said it publicly, that they're not wedded to Bashar al-Assad.
But can they divorce?
I hope so, but I can't assess it. I can tell you that what they've said publicly is they're not wedded to Bashar al-Assad, that Bashar al-Assad's fate should be determined by the Syrian people. Our argument is 4 million refugees and 12 million displaced people is a lot of Syrians who don't want this man.
Last question, is there still talk of sending troops on the ground in Syria?
Yes. We have said that this would not be unilateral on the part of Saudi Arabia. We are part of the US-led coalition against Daesh in Syria. We participate with our Air Force. We have said that if the United States sends ground troops into Syria to fight Daesh, that Saudi Arabia would be prepared to send special forces alongside those troops. But we will not be sending troops unilaterally.
Is the U.S. moving towards such a decision?
I believe they have said that they are, they have made the decision and that they are, but I'm not aware or in terms of the actual planning of it, so I can't comment on
it. But this could happen?
I believe it could happen, yes.
I want to move to Yemen, another regional crisis. The war has been raging for over a year. There are also peace talks. I don't know if they're really talks, because right now it's up in the air. There have been talks held in Kuwait for the past few weeks. Do you see any hope that they will eventually succeed?
Yes. We have to have hope. If we don't have hope, we can't operate. We have a war in Yemen that has lasted a year.
Much more than you thought.
The legitimate government, nobody can predict wars. Did anyone?
Saudi officials predicted a quick win.
Well, did anyone predict that World War II would last 6 years or that the Iraq War would last 10 years? Nobody did. The wars are uncertain. Allies change, alliances change, realities change. The objective of the war is being achieved. We are able to protect the legitimate government of Yemen. We're able to now liberate almost 80% of the country. We're able to allow humanitarian assistance to go into Yemen. We stopped Iran from dominating the country through a militia, the Houthi militias, which are allied with Iran and Hezbollah. So yes, in that sense, the objectives have been achieved. Now we want Yemen to move towards peace and reconstruction. We have worked with our allies in the GCC to put together a long-term development package for Yemen. We have reached out and talked to the Houthis directly about the importance of having peace in Yemen and having good neighborly relations with them. And we have encouraged the Yemeni government to go into the peace talks.
But it's not working for now. The Yemeni foreign minister said, we've seen no progress. We're talking, but they're not offering anything. Are you more optimistic
on Yemen
than you are on Syria, to put it
I'm optimistic on both. Syria will end, as I said, and it will end without Bashar al-Assad. And Yemen, the fact that they're sitting at the table and the fact that they both sides have accepted UN Resolution 2216, the fact that the Houthi Saleh side, which had previously rejected the GCC initiative and the outcomes of the National Dialogue and 2216, have now accepted it as the basis of discussion, is very optimistic. The fact that we have seen a reduction in the violence in Yemen is also optimistic. The fact that they have agreed to hand over their heavy and medium weapons is also very optimistic. The issues, I believe, or disagreements that they have pertain to the sequencing and the timing of the steps that need to be taken. And in all negotiations, we have to be prepared for some difficult moments. We have to be prepared for some setbacks. We have to be prepared. But in the overall scheme of things, I believe that what is happening in Kuwait is very significant, and I believe that it has moved the situation in Yemen closer to a resolution. And I hope, and we will be working very diligently with all parties on this, that we can continue to support the UN Special Envoy Ismail Walde Sheikh Ahmed in his attempts to bridge the gaps between the two sides.
This brings the issue of the regional situation, the relationship with Iran, diplomatic relations were severed several months ago.
They were cut.
They were cut. Is there any hope of mending fences with Iran, or do you still consider Iran's behavior in the region to be a major problem for Saudi Arabia and other countries?
I think nothing has changed in terms of Iran's behavior. Yes, we don't see a change. We see Iran in Lebanon, in Syria, in Iraq, in Kuwait, in Bahrain, in Yemen, in Saudi Arabia. We see Iranian officials advocating warfare. We see Iranian officials inciting. We see Iran harboring terrorists.
You sound a little bit like an Israeli politician sometimes when you talk about Iran. And the reason why I'm mentioning this is there are reports of meetings between former Saudi officials, Israeli officials, because there seems to be a de facto alliance between Saudi Arabia and Israel, because they both have their problems with Iran.
We don't have relations with Israel.
I know that.
And as far as
you have the same strategic ally, though.
And as far as our views towards Iran, these are shared by every country in the region: Kuwait, Bahrain, the UAE. Iran is a threat to everyone, and the Iranians, if they want to be good neighbors, and I hope they do, we respect Iran as a neighbor, a country with a great civilization. It's been around for hundreds of years. It will be around for hundreds of years. All you have to do is look at the map. They're on one side of the Gulf, we're on the other. We want to have good ties with them. Conflict doesn't serve them, and it doesn't serve us. But all the anger and all the conflict and all the aggression is one way, from Iran towards us. So they have to change if they want to be a good neighbor to us.
Are you having any exchanges with Israel on Iran?
No.
Very good. Thank you very much on those words, Foreign Minister Adel Al-Joubert from Saudi Arabia, for being our guest today on the interview on France 24.
All right, and we are back. It's Orly Benny Davis with BBS Radio with The Impossible Truth. Today, France 24. France 24 spoke to the foreign minister of the Arabia Saudite, and what happened is he told everybody, he just declared that Assad needs to leave. If not, there is also the potential boots on the ground. They said, of course, with the coordinates with the coalition, but they're going to send weapons to the rebels. So just think about the load of weapons that they're going to send to change the balance of power. And if you think that the Syrians are going to sit back and Hezbollah on the other side will just stay put, they probably miscalculate the formula, and the Iranians are not going to go away. The question of the day is, what role Saudis is taking? Because if they are thinking to push Iran out of the equation and make sure that they have the power, the parents in Syria, I think that they have a lot coming. Because remember, the conflict between the Sunnis and the Shiite, which represent the Saudis versus the Iranian, are in the top notch in Iraq. You know, the battle started there long time ago, and it's not going to go away. Let's go to some music, and we'll be back after that. Thank you. And we are back. It's Orly Benny Davis with Impossible Truth on BBS Radio Studio One with Doug Newsom that is helping me. Thank you so much for your help all the year. And tonight, as we start celebrating the Independence Day for Israel, which took place in 1948, and many people still question what's the purpose of a Jewish state. And, you know, when you have, you know, people that are being persecuted for so long and so many years, 2,000 years pushed around since the destruction of the Holy Temple, you can think why they need a home. Now, the home is the natural home. It's not the place that they decided, like the United Nations wanted Uganda to be a part of the settlement when the Zionist movement started. But Israel is the biblical place. So we came back home. We didn't, you know, we are born, we are part of the land. Now, some people were talking about the Palestinian people, like they have a title on the land. Palestinian is the name of the land that was called by the Roman. Like Jordan is, you know, it's not, they are not people of Jordan. Jordan is the title of the river that crossed the land. People that are Jordanian, they are people from near that river. Because Palestine was Jordan included in the old time, and that was the land of the old biblical Holy Land. Now, if you think about things that are being changed in the perception of people, you might consider looking into the history and understanding why the world decided to give back a biblical place to the Jewish people. It's not because we are cute and not because we have to bribe anybody. We just had to sacrifice years and years and, you know, being pushed around until one great king from Britain decided that he wants to make a divine, you know, he wants to answer to the divine calling of biblical. And, you know, they're saying that he wanted to give the land immediately, but he wasn't empowered because Britain was not holding to Palestine. That's why the mandate came about, and the British had the mandate on the land. So it's historical fact that you can go and you can stretch it. And, you know, sometimes the Palestinian from Canaan, they are sometimes they are, I don't know, they moved. I'm just saying, if you want to live like a good neighbor, or if you live even in the same country, you can arrange an understanding. You don't have to fight. The fact that you decide to take a weapon makes you a criminal. It doesn't make you right. The fact that you decide to fight somebody, it doesn't make you right. Now, the fight, when you start a fight, and you endanger million of people, a massive, massive answer will be answered to your call. Now, the Palestinian, when they start in 1940, remember the first day of my broadcasting was 7/7/14. There was a siren there. My first, very first. And the fact that we have everything on record, we can go back and review the data, because I would inform you to up to the ground, up of what the truth is. I would not, you know, tell you anything, any story, and I don't try to cover up for anybody. So right now there is an investigation, inquiry into that war. And I want to go and check it out for real, like everybody else. And there are people that say that, you know, the Israeli government did not do its best. And I'm saying I was there and you were with me on the news and we follow, and they did the best they can. And I remember warning everybody in writing and saying, and I said, tell them to back off. Tell the Palestinian to back off. Gaza, Hamas, because if not, They need to get an answer. The Israeli government will not tolerate bombardment. And sure enough, they bombarded Gaza. Now, what's the fun about the bombarding? If, you know, it's one bomb kills so many. It's maybe make you stop. No, they didn't. Ceasefire. If you remember, there were so many times that the Israeli government called for ceasefire just to stop because they didn't want to hurt. And first of all, before they even start bombarding, they announced to the civilian to evacuate. We called upon everybody to evacuate to a safe place. We wanted to create a safe haven. And remember, with the collaboration and the understanding of the Egyptian government. Now, the Palestinian decided to elect a terrorist organization named Hamas. Electable. They actually democratically elected a terrorist organization. A million people decided that, a group, maybe they were coerced, maybe they were forced. Let's not be naive on that. Now, if you think about being forced to vote for the Hamas, what they did, they add a Hamas organization, run the place, run the school, they give them food and such, you know, and they shelter themselves, the terrorists shelter themselves in the school and in the hospitals, and in they put missile under their rugs of many houses or under, not rugs, under the beds of something. And then they shoot in behind, you know, the trees, so they shoot a missile. Now, think about a missile that is launched toward Tel Aviv. Think about the danger of a million people. If you think that the Israeli government, or any other government for that matter, will sit put and one bombard back the place that it was come from, you are mistaken, because I know America will level the place. Israel did not. They call about evacuation, and they bombarded the place, and they told them. And I remember those calls. They said, you know, it's near the hospital, and everybody was tormented. What are we going to do? And you cannot do anything. And on top of it, the United Nations, you know, the people that actually are supposed to help the UNRWA, they were storing in storage missile. And they gave it to Hamas. And the head of the United Nations, which we should resign long time ago after that, they come to visit and said, oh, it's a bad thing. We should have, you know, inspect and ask questions. Well, no answer were answered. Why the missile were given back to terrorist organization? So, for me, it's a collaboration. I don't know. In America, it's really simple. You give a gun to somebody to shoot, you are accomplice like they are. So, Sanders and Hillary have to pick up a fight over what kind of engagement Israel had in response to the missile attack. Now, both of them are really sweet. Hillary had been working hard for the ceasefire in 2012 because there was another round. And in 2014, you know, there was another round. So Sanders, which had his first round, his number wrong, and then he corrected some, he wants to talk high and mighty, you know, like a nice Jewish guy that he is. Which, you know, in Jewish land, we love to have a Jewish president. But for some reason, he's the most socialist, most left-wing that you can get, which is hard. And, you know, it sounds maybe bad, but sometimes you really wish for somebody calm and put to be in charge. So let's listen to what Sanders and Hillary had to talk about.
Let's talk about the U.S. relationship with Israel. Senator Sanders, you maintain that Israel's response in Gaza in 2014 was, quote, disproportionate and led to the unnecessary loss of innocent life. What do you say to those who believe that Israel has a right to defend itself as it sees fit?
Well, as somebody who spent many months of my life when I was a kid in Israel, who has family in Israel. Of course, Israel has a right not only to defend themselves, but to live in peace and security without fear of terrorist attack. That is not a debate. But what you just read, yeah, I do believe that. Israel was subjected to terrorist attacks, has every right in the world to destroy terrorism. But we had in the Gaza area, not a very large area, some 10,000 civilians who were wounded and some 1,500 who were killed. Now, if you're asking me, not just me, but countries all over the world, was that a disproportionate attack? The answer is, I believe it was. And let me say something else. As somebody who is 100% pro-Israel, in the long run, and this is not going to be easy, God only knows, but in the long run, if we are ever going to bring peace to that region which has seen so much hatred and so much war, we are going to have to treat the Palestinian people with respect and dignity. So one is not to say that right now in Gaza, unemployment is somewhere around 40%. You got a lot of that area continues and hasn't been rebuilt. Decimated, houses decimated, healthcare decimated, schools decimated. I believe the United States and the rest of the world have got to work together to help the Palestinian people. That does not make me anti-Israel. That paves the way, I think.
Thank you, Senator.
For an approach that works in the Middle
East. Thank you. Secretary Clinton, do you agree with Senator Sanders that Israel overreacts to Palestinian attacks and that in order for there to be peace between Israel and the Palestinians, Israel must, quote, end its disproportionate responses?
I negotiated the ceasefire between Israel and Hamas in November of 2012. I did it in concert with President Abbas of the Palestinian Authority, based in Ramallah. I did it with the then Muslim Brotherhood President Morsi, based in Cairo, working closely with Prime Minister Netanyahu and the Israeli cabinet. I can tell you right now, because I have been there with Israeli officials going back more than 25 years, that they do not seek this kind of attacks. They do not invite rockets raining down on their towns and villages. They do not believe that there should be a constant incitement by Hamas, aided and abetted by Iran, against Israel. And so when it came time, after they had taken the incoming rockets, taken the assaults and ambushes on their soldiers, and they called and told me, I was in Cambodia, that they were getting ready to have to invade Gaza again because they couldn't find anybody to talk to tell them to stop it. I flew all night. I got there. I negotiated that. So I don't know how you run a country when you are under constant threat, terrorist attack, rockets coming at you. You have a right to defend yourself. That does not mean that you don't take appropriate precautions. And I understand that there's always second guessing anytime there is a war. It also does not mean that we should not continue to do everything we can to try to reach a two-state solution, which would give the Palestinians the rights, and just let me finish, the rights and the autonomy that they deserve. And let me say this, if Yasser Arafat had agreed with my husband at Camp David in the late 1990s to the offer that Prime Minister Barak put on the table, we would have had a Palestinian state
Senator,
for 15 years already.
Go ahead, Senator.
I don't think that anybody would suggest that Israel invites or welcomes missiles flying into their country. That is not the issue. And you evaded the answer. You evaded the question. The question is not does Israel have a right to respond, not does Israel have a right to go after terrorists and destroy terrorism. That's not the debate. Was their response disproportionate? I believe that it was. You have not answered that.
Well, I will certainly be willing to answer it. I think I did answer it by saying that, of course, there have to be precautions taken. But even the most independent analyst will say the way that Hamas places its weapons, the way that it often has its fighters in civilian garb, it is terrible. I'm not saying it's anything other than terrible, but it would be great. Remember, Israel left Gaza. They took out all the Israelis. They turned the keys over to the Palestinian people. And what happened? Hamas took over Gaza. So instead of having a thriving economy with the kind of opportunities that the children of the Palestinians deserve, we have a terrorist haven that is getting more and more rockets shipped
Thank
in
you,
from
Secretary.
Iran and elsewhere.
Senator. I read Secretary Clinton's statement speech before AIPAC. I heard virtually no discussion at all about the needs of the Palestinian people, almost none in that speech. So here is the issue. Of course, Israel has a right to defend itself. But long term, there will never be peace in that region unless the United States plays a role, an even-handed role, trying to bring people together and recognizing the serious problems that exist among the Palestinian people. That is what I believe the world wants us to do. And that's the kind of leadership that we have got to exercise.
Well, if I want to add, you know, again, describing the problem is a lot easier than trying to solve it. And I have been involved, both as First Lady with my husband's efforts, as a senator supporting the efforts that even the Bush administration was undertaking, and as Secretary of State for President Obama. I'm the person who held the last three meetings between the president of the Palestinian Authority and the prime minister of Israel. There were only four of us in the room, Netanyahu, Abbas, George Mitchell, and me. Three long meetings. And I was absolutely focused on what was fair and right for the Palestinians. I was absolutely focused on what we needed to do to make sure that the Palestinian people had the right to self-government.
Thank you.
And I believe that as president, I will be able to continue to make progress and get an agreement that will be fair both to the Israelis and the Palestinians without ever undermining Israel's security.
There comes a time when, if we pursue justice and peace, we are going to have to say that Netanyahu is not right all of the time.
Well,
Secretary,
you know, I have spoken about and written at some length the very candid conversations I've had with him and other Israeli leaders. Nobody is saying that any individual leader is always right, but it is a difficult position if you are, from whatever perspective, trying to seek peace, trying to create the conditions for peace, when there is a terrorist group embedded in Gaza that does not want to see you exist. That
but,
is a very
Senator, go ahead.
Difficult
you,
challenge.
You gave a major speech to AIPAC, which obviously deals with the Middle East crisis, and you barely mentioned the Palestinians. And I think, again, it is a complicated issue. And God knows, for decades, presidents, including President Clinton and others, Jimmy Carter and others, have tried to do the right thing. All that I am saying is we cannot continue to be one-sided. There are two sides to the
issue. Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Secretary. We have to take another quick break for much more on the...
All right. That was Wolf Blitzer with Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. Now, Bernie, he mentioned Carter. Oh, my goodness. He's still there. Now, Bernie Sanders is a great candidate. He's a revolutionary guy. He's a guy that will bring, you know, social justice and all. About the Middle East, about Israel, he needs to have a better advisor. To say that Hillary Clinton, that dealt with President Clinton and all the time she was Secretary of State on the issue of Palestinian and didn't mention Palestinian, it's really bogus. You need to understand, Mr. Bernie Sanders, she actually was on the part of this Palestinian. She was completely on their side. That's why there never, never could be any solution, because the Israeli have one thing that they cannot give up. Like the foreign minister of the Saudis said just now, I let you listen. There is things that you cannot overrule. The one that depend on security and the one that depend on faith. Israel cannot give up security and cannot give up her faith. Israeli people have Jerusalem as a core belief in from the biblical time. It's a legend of 2,000 to 3,000 years since the Kingdom of David. Temple Mount, the holy site of Temple Mount, the site of the first and the second temple, is the holy grounds for all the world to come to pray before God. The Jewish people believe in that. They cannot give it up. And I'll tell you what. I ran by a guy that was the advisor of Yasser Arafat, the former, you know, leader of the Palestinian people. And he told me, do you know why in 2000, in year 2000 at Camp David, Yasser Arafat did not want to sign the agreement, the same agreement that Hillary Clinton was mentioning now, that if Yasser Arafat would have signed it, the Palestinian would have been in 15 years, 16 years of prosperity. Do you know why, he asked me? And I asked him why. He said, because Yasser Arafat could not believe Israel will ever give up on Temple Mount. He, as religious man he was, understood what's the Holy Temple site is for the Jewish people. He knew that. And the fact that Prime Minister Ehud Barak even contemplated the idea to sign an agreement with, you know, and to leave Israel without Temple Mount, for him, for Yasser Arafat, was a joke. He thought that they are joking on him. And I'm so sad that President Clinton did not get it. I'm sad that Hillary Clinton doesn't know it yet, but now, you know, maybe she will. The fact is, there are things that you cannot give up. And if Israel came back to the land, and today, and the celebration of her 68 years only, a years that she invested to build, to fight for her freedom, and also to build the land, she would never be without Jerusalem or Temple Mount. And if Bernie Sanders thinks that it's about time to take care of the Palestinian, when you get the allowance of $5 billion that was given to the Palestinian people after this 2014, let's call it war, $5 billion, and it was invested in tunnel underneath to reach Israel to destroy it. It's like they're run by people that are not, their reality is distorted. All the money is invested to kill Israel. To remind us like Daesh, or remember ISIS, it's the same thing. If you think about people who want to destroy others, and they don't care if they die in the process, if they kill their children in the process, you have to think what's the sort of the mind they have. They are not for life, they are not for peace, and nobody could convince us elsewhere, because their action talks louder than words. So peace is a state of mind. Peace is love for mankind, anyone. And from here, the Holy Land, I'm sending you all my love and all the blessing in the world for you to have a wonderful day, a wonderful time all over the world, wherever you are. Be safe, be happy, be loved. God bless you all. Bye-bye.